This is Jeffrey Wright. You're listening to The Story. This season celebrates the unknown backstories of African-American trailblazers that changed the world. You'll get to walk a mile in their shoes, and their identity is secret until the climax.
Welcome to another episode of The Story After Show. We are here in an undisclosed location. No, not really. We're at Salesforce. We have a special guest for you back for the second time. The first time was at the Trailblazing Women event. And this time I am joined with Lynn Zaladonis. What's going on?
Hey, Ian. Good to see you and good to talk to you again. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming back. We loved having you on the first time. It was super fun. We call you a super fan. I think it's even in some of our collateral that you're a super fan.
I am. But, you know, that was really fun and exciting. It was a live event. We were recording live. Not as exciting this time. It's fun to be here with you, but we are in a conference room.
That's true.
I liked your attempt to make that pretty exciting, too.
That's true. I mean, and we miss Chad, too. Shout out to Chad, who's locked in a...
Locked
in a basement somewhere writing his little heart's content. Okay, so we're going to talk about two episodes today that we have recently done in The Story. Season 7, the first one we're going to talk about. Yeah, I know, right? I know, it's been, gosh, many seasons since you were last on. The first one is Dr. Mae Jemison. She was the first woman of color to go into space. This story was one that we really wanted to do at the mission because, number one, a lot of space nerds on our team. So we're big fans of hers in general. She was a huge fan of A Wrinkle in Time and The Arm of the Starfish, which we've actually done A Wrinkle in Time as one of the episodes of The Story with Madison Langle. And her story is one that was truly a trailblazer, and one of the reasons why we wanted to bring you on. She was someone who didn't have a lot of role models. She was a really unique person and continued to serve after she left NASA. So we're going to get into all that stuff, but what were your first kind of impressions of the story?
Oh, I loved that one. I don't think you have to be a space nerd. Astronauts are such a respected and revered profession. For as a young child, everybody wants to be an astronaut, or the idea of it sounds so exciting. But what I loved, and not to get too much into it also, is that that even wasn't her first goal.
Yeah,
you know, that just sort of came after. She had accomplished so much already in her life. So I loved hearing about that. And that was super inspiring. She also did a great job of mixing the art and the science.
Yeah.
You know, that was really beautiful too.
So did you want to be an astronaut when you were a kid?
No, I think that seemed, I was a little timid as a child. I think that seemed way too scary, but I was definitely impressed with astronauts.
That's kind of how I felt too, especially, you know, you have Apollo 13, you have all this stuff and it's all exciting. I really wanted to like float in air.
Oh, for sure.
Like that was one of those things where like I always wanted to go skydiving because I was like, oh man, imagine being weightless and all that and they're moving around. What's funny is, I think we all know that being an astronaut is hard, but you don't realize like how hard. Like 99% of it is you have to be like essentially perfect physically.
Oh.
Like your body has to be
and mentally,
a temple, right? Yeah, and you have to be crazy smart, and they're all doctors and all of that. So just from like a physical standpoint, you know, me with kind of my background going to West Point in the military and all that, where the number one thing that most people can't get in the military is it's just so difficult physically to have your body, you can't have any real issues going into it. And so she masters that side of things. She masters the educational side of things and has this kind of stick-to-itiveness that we see from a lot of the characters that we've profiled or the real life characters that we've profiled in the story.
I love it. And you know, it's funny you said, did I want to be an astronaut? I said, well, it seemed a little scary. It also seemed hard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in high school, I was at the mall and she's skipping grades and at Stanford on a scholarship by age 16. I was just trying to get my driver's license at 16. And so that's the caliber of people that we're seeing show up at NASA, you know, Johnson Space Center, and they were putting into space, as we should, put the cream of the crop up there. So that's why that wasn't necessarily an obtainable, in my mind, goal. But what I think was so fascinating about her was that she was so, not only just so bright, but so driven her entire life, even as a child, that I would guess she never saw those barriers. And I would love to sit down with her, right, and understand, did you ever once question that you could do these things you did? you know, go to college at 16, be the only woman in her class. And I'm going to guess in a lot of cases, she was probably not only the only woman, but the only African-American.
Oh, for sure.
And then a woman on top of that, which we call the double unicorn sometimes. Yeah. It's like the strength and internal strength she possessed to forge ahead, despite not having that clear path put in front of her.
I mean, in your career, you know, you obviously sit at a position now at an amazing company, which just got released that it was one of the top companies to work for.
One of the most innovative companies in the world.
Yeah. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thanks.
And you sit at a position where you built this whole thing yourself. Obviously, you know, you've talked about, you've had a lot of help from people, but as someone who has done this themselves, you know, similar but different, what were some of the like takeaways yet that you kind of like saw like, oh, that might have been similar to my career?
It'd be hard for me to compare myself to Dr. Jemison. She's an amazing woman and has accomplished so much. But I think what I did take away from was inspiration. And there's parallels in what she has done in her life that I can take back to my life, even though so seemingly different, to inspire me to follow different dreams or to pursue ahead or to make sure I'm laser focused. And these different iterations of her career she's had, I actually related to. Embarrassed to say this because it's so small, but I have in my career, if you go out on LinkedIn, you'll see I've taken several different moves. And a lot of times I've made career changes from solution engineering to running a sales organization to running a product marketing organization. And a lot of times these were back and forth and back and forth, but it has really made my life so rich and full and well-rounded. And I'm guessing a lot of that's what motivated her too. She went on to get her doctorate. And then she did medicine in third world countries. And then she became an astronaut. In all these ways, she was continuing to try and learn and grow and do new things, making her this well-rounded individual. While mine seems much smaller, those are sort of things I also live and believe in too, that I have to work and I want to make it fun and interesting and I want to continue to learn. And I saw that actually in both of our stories, but this thirst for knowledge and curiosity they had to continue to grow.
But I think that's a really interesting point because you are such a passionately curious person. And like you can see from your career that you've had interest in all these things. You know, like, you know, one of the things about her story is, so she was, you know, discussing Einstein's theory of relativity with her uncle when she was like 6 years old, right? Like we see all of these people have this curiosity. And I think that it's something in business, you know, it's popularized more, I think, now that curiosity is so important. But in the early days, I don't think that was necessarily something that people were going to bang on the table and be like, oh, you know what our best salespeople are? Curious. You know what our best marketing people are? Curious or whatever. Have you found that curiosity is something that has served you in your career?
I do think so. I think curiosity, the willingness to learn and the willingness to try new things has really served me well in terms of not just growing my career and learning new things and becoming a more well-rounded leader and executive, but it also has made things interesting and fun. I will often do mentoring or career workshops and there's, you know, a lot of younger people in there and they're maybe 3 years in the workforce. And they're like, well, I've done this one thing. So now I'm going to try something new.
Yeah.
Like, well, you did that for one year and you think you've checked that box. You have to work probably 40 more years. Let's slow your roll and get as much as you can out of that. You really learned everything you can learn in that job you're having. And that goes back to being curious. There's also a little element, I'm curious to hear what you think about this, of risk taking.
Yeah.
Right? Being willing to trust yourself to be able to try something new. And in a lot of cases, that's been scary for me, even, you know, in the later parts of my career, to try something that you weren't 120% sure you could do. But that also is part of the joy of the ride. And I'm sure you do it well in the podcast when Dr. Jemison calls the Johnson Space Center. I'm sure there must have been a little pit in that stomach that was like, all right, here we go. I've thought about this, but okay, let's do this.
Totally. I mean, that at the end of the day, like it comes down to those micro moments. And that's why, you know, we like to focus on them in the story, but it's these miniature moments in your life where the one phone call, like I remember the phone call when I got called from my old, who became my battalion commander when I was in the Army. I was in a casino. I was in Harrah's Casino. Shout out to Harrah's, not a sponsor. I was in Harrah's Casino in New Orleans. at a roulette table. This is actually really funny. So I'm at this roulette table sitting there with my friends. You can't answer your phone when you're at, when you're sitting at a roulette table, FYI. I get a phone call. I answer the phone call, right? I look down. I hit the number that I was playing and I was like, oh my goodness. And the guy's like, no phones at the table. I'm like, I back up. So I answered the phone. It was from a Southern California number. And the only person I know who lives in Southern California was my friend. And I was like, I answered the phone. I said, not in this way, but I said, like, what the heck do you want? And then hey, this is Lieutenant Colonel, like whatever. And And so I'm like, oh, hey, sir.
Then you don't want to say where you are.
Yeah. I'm like, sorry. I thought you were someone else. How could I help you? And yeah, he was like, hey, I just, you know, want to let you know that you're approved to, you know, come to my unit and all this sort of stuff. And I'll never forget that moment. And the reason why was because I think it was like 5 months earlier, I spent like 2 weeks researching all of these different positions that I wanted. And I cold emailed this guy, even though this is like not how it works in the Army either. That's like the funny thing. There's this thing called like a by name request, which they ended up like getting rid of and all this sort of stuff. So it ended up being this very weird thing. And that was the way that I got that job, was because I sent a cold, you know, email, which like...
Stretched yourself? Took on a little risk?
Yeah, right. And it's like, that's one of those things. And so I came back to the roulette table and the number hit again.
Meant to be.
I know, right? It was pretty funny.
But and, you know, just to bring it down for some people who might be listening to this, like, okay, cool. Glad you're comparing yourselves to Dr. Jemison.
Oh, yeah.
These risks can be small, right? It can be you're sitting in your team meeting and someone says, well, we should, you know, we're going to need a team for that. Does anyone want to lead that team? And you're looking around waiting for somebody else to raise their hand. Like, be the one that raises their hand. It can be a small project that you take a risk on and you don't know that that is or isn't going to take you down a bit different path, just to make that a little bit more relatable for people that think you have to be an astronaut and take risks at that level.
100%. And you know, one of her famous quotes is she says, the future never just happened, it was created. And I think that it's just a really good takeaway from both of these stories is that both these women made the future that they wanted to live in. It did not live, you know, like
it didn't exist.
And you know, she was someone who was observing the civil rights protests in Chicago. She was like 12 years old. She's seeing all this craziness around her, and she remains super focused on something that ends up not being her career, right? And then she kind of makes this left turn into being an astronaut, but she was creating the future and she kind of learned that stuff. And then flash forward to after her career in NASA, and she starts the Jemison Foundation and the 100-year Starship program. And you look at those things, and you know what's super difficult? Starting a business when you've never done that before, starting a nonprofit when you've never done that before. Like those type of things are also their own new challenge. And it's a totally unique thing that you've never done before. And the fact that you're an astronaut, like, that's not going to get you donations. It's not going to propel this thing. You realize, oh, it's back to square one. I have to do the work.
Yeah, I think you and I talked about this a little bit beforehand, just the clarity of vision both Dr. Jemison and Dr. Bather will talk about later had, because they didn't see role models or a path. There wasn't somebody who had done this before them. So they were truly forging their own way. And they reinvented themselves several times. And in every case, they were still the pioneers of that field or of that movement. So the incredible inner strength, without having met them, I believe these women have.
Yeah, I mean, let's switch gears into Dr. Patricia Bath. So she created something that I don't think I can confidently explain exactly what it does.
For sure. Even though everybody in my family's had cataract surgery, I still couldn't explain it.
Yeah, right. I've had PRK, so not cataract surgery, but I have had eye surgery, and I still don't really understand how this stuff works. But I think that that's like, you know, one of the things that's so interesting about this story is like how people find themselves, you know. They get a little bit further and they're like, well, that's interesting. And then they get a little bit further. And then she goes on these trips and she sees these problems. She's like, well, that needs to have a solution. Like, who is working on this? And I love in these stories when the person realizes that nobody is working on this. And they're like, wait, then someone needs to work on this. And like, it may as well be me. But that's a really hard thing to realize, right? Like, it's a hard thing.
Well,
it's
we
like,
all look around and wait for somebody else to do it.
Yeah, right? And it's like to look in the mirror and be like, I'm the one who should do this. I think a lot of times like that imposter syndrome is very real. You just think someone else smarter than me, someone else better than me can probably solve this problem. And a lot of us just don't necessarily have that second voice just being like, you got to do it. And she was out there in the field seeing people with these problems and realized like, I need to do this.
Again, to bring that down, you know, Dr. Patty Bath was invented a technology that made it easier and simpler and less painful for people to have cataract surgery and regain their eyesight. But you bring that down to the business level in the world that most of us live in. How many times is there a job opening and you think, well, maybe I'm not qualified or somebody else should do this. It's like if she had stepped back and thought somebody else should be inventing this.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, who knows where we'd be today?
How many times have you interviewed director level positions where, you know, you have a, you know, whatever, 10 applicants, or maybe don't have any applicants sometimes, where it's people who are truly punching below their weight. And you're like, why are you applying for this role? Like, you should be a VP somewhere. You should be something else.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what, in your experience, what are some of the things that you think hold people back from stuff like that?
Oh, 100%. It's the lack of confidence. And we see it a lot. And when you read studies and surveys about women in particular, because I'm very focused on that myself and making sure we're helping and mentoring women to make sure we're bridging that gender equality gap. There's a need to make sure you've checked all the boxes and dotted all the I's and crossed your T's before you go ahead and step up to the plate,
yeah.
Right? And so when you see a job opening or somebody to lead a task force, you often are holding yourself back thinking, well, I've done 9 of the 10 things, but I haven't done the 10th. And that's when role models and mentors and advocates play such an important part in people's lives to give you that push you needed or to give you that pull. For a mentor, it's to give you the push to say, hey, let's talk a lot about this. I think you should go for it. For an advocate, that's somebody who's more or less talking about you, not with you, who sits in that meeting and says, well, how about so-and-so?
Yeah.
Have we considered this person for that role to give you a pull to pull you forward to help you with that confidence?
You know, it reminds me of a conversation. So we did an interview for one of our other podcasts with Layla Seca, and she was talking about the gender equality gap. And she was saying that like the lightning bolt that happened in her mind was she was like, I saw a bunch of my peers driving Teslas. She's like, wait a second.
Right.
Like how are they all affording Teslas?
That's so lame. Right? I love it.
I know, it's so her, right? Which is hilarious. But it was kind of that moment where it's like, there's something not right here. And then she was like, somebody should do something about this.
Right.
Right. Like,
And she didn't wait for somebody else to do it. Yeah. She did it.
And she's like, oh, we need to fix this. And, you know, it's a huge, could you actually talk a little bit more about the gender equality gap and what the work Salesforce has done? Because I think for our listeners who don't know.
Yeah, it's absolutely one of one of many things that I'm very proud of that Salesforce focuses on that makes me proud to work here. In addition to the amazing technology and innovation, like we talked about, we have a real emphasis around equality. And several years ago now, I can't remember the exact year, but Layla Seca, Cindy Robbins, and others approached Mark Benioff to talk about the gender inequality and the wage gap that we had at Salesforce. And you know, there's a famous quote on 60 Minutes where he says, oh, I was so cocky. I was, you know, no, we don't have that at Salesforce. We care about equality. So they said, well, let's run the numbers. But you have to promise us if we run the numbers that you'll do something about it. We can't step back and say, wow, that's going to be really expensive. Oh, well. And he made that commitment. And they did. They found, you know, a gap. And they continue to look at this. We acquire companies. We bring other companies into our business. So we continue every several years to do that. And sometimes it happens on a big scale. And sometimes it's just really minor. I'll see it even within my team where there might be a slight adjustment. And doesn't sound like a big deal, but over time, if you're, you know, $500, $1,000 off 1 year, if you don't do something about that, how does that look in 10 years from now for people's salaries? So we're making sure that people get paid for the work they do. And that makes me incredibly proud to work here.
And it starts with that itch where somebody looked at this and was like, that just doesn't, something is off about this.
Right.
And I think, you know, back to Dr. Bath, one of the great quotes that she had is, do not allow your mind to be imprisoned by majority thinking. Remember that the limits of science are not the limits of your imagination. It's an incredible quote, and it's so inspiring to think about that your imagination, that the secrets that are all around you, the things that are all around you that you can innovate, that you can make better, whether that's in your family life, whether that is, you know, in your work life, they're everywhere. And you can find those things if you kind of put on your detective hat and are curious.
And people like her are super multidimensional. And I love how I'm talking about her like I'm friends with her. But I want to be now after.
I know, right?
You know what's interesting, actually? Let me back this up a minute. When I listen to these, I love trying to guess who it is before I do. And I knew Dr. Mae Jemison. And I...
Did you?
I love like women heroes and we all worship astronauts. Yeah. Poor Patricia Bath. I did not know who she was. Like, you know?
It's unbelievable.
She was an amazing surgeon and she was a scientist and a technologist. She invented a technology that enables surgery.
Yeah, she has like 6 patents or something like that.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's amazing.
I don't know.
And then she also now is a philanthropist.
Yep.
So what an amazing multidimensional woman, like just incredible. And I loved reading about and discovering her. That was a really fun thing about her story for me was discovering who she is.
Well, and her organization that she continues to direct is the American Institute for the Prevention of Blindness. It's so crazy. And it's such an ambitious goal. Like you think about some of the things that, you know, I think we wax poetic as a society sometimes about, you know, the things that we were able to do, like Empire State Building, I think was built in 18 months or something.
Well,
like. Yeah, it's crazy. So the crazy-
Don't make me comment on some of the construction projects we have here in the Bay Area, right?
Hey, if you do, I have a great podcast for you. But we looked at this when we were working on one of our projects, Future Cities. And yeah, the craziest thing about the Empire State Building, it was under budget and on time.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that crazy? But yeah, it's the same thing with lots of these like architectural feats or things like this that were built kind of back in the day. And with something like what Dr. Bath was working on, she was actually giving sight to the blind, right? Like this is something that is so like such a human condition and is so empowering. And it's like, man, we got to do a better job of telling her story.
I love how big she thinks. And this is another piece of advice for everybody, right? We all sometimes think so narrowly around our world, right? Like, how do I get that next promotion? Or how do I get the bigger house? It's like, she went to Yugoslavia as a doctor and came back with the mission to cure blindness.
Yep.
Now, how far she will get in her lifetime, I don't know, but she certainly laid down the foundation for if not her, for future generations to do that. And that is, you talk about thinking big and then she took it down one by one, right? First, I will start this specific problem we have and go from there. And that is incredible. And we can all do that. We should all, you know, don't just go into the project you're given at work. How is this impacting the bigger goal for the year, for the company, for your career, right? And then start checking it off bit by bit.
Well, we always talk about like customer discovery and like actually getting out of the building from a business standpoint and talking to people. But you see a lot of these innovations happen when people get out of the office and are going actually working with people on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great video of somebody recreated a wheelbarrow. And basically this wheelbarrow carries water in a way that wheelbarrow carries water. Yeah, it's great. Sounds good. But so anyways, it's this plastic wheelbarrow and it's like, it's shaped like a self-contained.
Try to see how you're going to do this on.
I know this is great radio. Great radio here. Just think in your mind. But basically, it's like a cylindrical plastic container that you can fill with water, and then you can just roll it on the ground, kind of like almost like those things that roll over cement to flatten it. But people in this town that were moving water, like however many miles a day, that were carrying water on their heads or
clean water is such a problem and it's so much of our world.
Right. And so what was the problem for the clean water? Like it's about transporting the amount that you can physically carry as a person, right? And then so these wheelbarrows made a huge difference. Things like that are so, it might seem like elementally simple or something that like in where you current, I mean, is that a problem that you ever have? No, of course. Like Ian doesn't worry about how much water he can carry on a daily basis ever because we are blessed with tons of things, you know, where we sit. But that's just not the case for people all over the world. And people like Patricia have the ability to really see into the future, pardon the pun here, and go and talk to people and then try to find an actual solution.
Yeah, that was super inspiring. And it made me also, when you talk about in the beginning of this podcast, we talked about what inspires me. And or what did I take away from, or what parallels. I definitely wanted to get out of our country, our world, our Western Hemisphere, and explore to more, and not just for vacation purposes, how they both dedicated some of their lives to taking their skills and talents to other parts of the world. And I think that both changed their lives for the better too in their careers, because they saw problems or were inspired. And I think that's just such an important part of all of our journeys.
That's a great takeaway. And, you know, we always try to leave our audience with a good takeaway, but I really think that that's a great one. It's like how we talk about, you know, especially like Salesforce has the 1-1-1 program about giving back 1% of your time, resources, or money.
It is our time, our equity, which is our money, and our product. We give our
product
away.
That's right, product. We're part of the missions, part of the 1-1-1 program as well. But it's a great way to frame your personal life too. Is like, are you giving away like 1% of your stuff to those in need? And it could be, again, it could be something super simple, but it also could be, you know, you have to go there and do it. There's absolutely nothing wrong with just writing a check, not saying that they're, you know,
they need money too.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you're not seeing the problems firsthand, then
it's hard to be inspired by it or want to truly make a change, right? We should all give in any way that we can, but that was the impetus for a lot of them making change. It's what made Dr. Jemison go into space, coming back and rethinking what was important to her and seeing the stars. And for Dr. Patty Bath, it was her mission to cure blindness. And it's just incredible. They're both super inspiring.
I know. It's so inspiring.
And don't let me ever say, Ian, like, oh, I don't think I can do that. It's like, really?
I know, right?
Did you learn to speak Swahili and learn to dance and go to college at 16? Then
it's crazy. And the final piece on that, I think, is just having the vision. You've worked for a lot of people that have vision to look into the future a little bit and just say, hey, I think that this is going to matter and we should probably be focused on that. With Dr. Jemison, she is focused on this 100-year project. Like,
okay, that was crazy. Was that not crazy?
It's so crazy and it's so cool.
Tell them people, though, because
I might get it wrong. So basically, it's the 100-year Starship program is something that she created in order to, essentially, it's like make humans a multi-planetary species.
She has this vision that we should be able to hop between planets and live on different planets. How crazy. I mean, it's not crazy. It's going to happen someday. And she wants to be a part of that change.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
But that's like the sci-fi movies of our childhood.
Totally. Right. And that's, I think, when you look at something like that and that ridiculously audacious goal, but when you're trying to build for something that's beyond yourself, when you're trying to cure blindness, when you're trying to, you know, do something that's 100 years in the future, a helpful thing is you look back, like, what was 100 years ago? And it's like, we didn't even know what caused blindness 100 years ago, right? We weren't.
Could you imagine these phones you and I are both looking at for stats and quotes? No.
No, I know for stats and quotes. Yeah. Wait, what are you talking about? This is all off the top of my
memorized.
Head. But I think it's cool to see these women like truly be trailblazers and to continue this service and having this vision long after what a lot of people would just say, like, hey, I'm going to hang it up and not focus on this stuff anymore because I've kind of done enough. The fact that they continue innovating is just really cool.
Yeah, I agree. They're amazing.
Any other final thoughts?
I really appreciate the focus you have on these women. They're so inspiring. Thank you for letting me learn more about Dr. Jemison. Thank you for introducing me to Dr. Bath. These are just female trailblazers that have overcome so much from socioeconomic backgrounds, being first as African Americans to do a lot of the things they have accomplished, and as women too. And I am super pumped up, and sharing their stories is going to inspire, hopefully, hundreds and thousands of more women to make small differences in their lives to achieve more. And so thank you for putting the focus on it. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for listening to The Story. If you love this story and want more, tap subscribe to make sure you don't ever miss an episode. Thank you again to our presenting sponsor, Salesforce. Learn more about how they are creating a workplace where everyone can be their full, authentic selves by empowering employee resource groups like Boldforce for Black employees and allies to lead the way as equality trailblazers. Salesforce created a special report called The Impact of Equality and Values-Driven Business, which you can read by clicking the link in our show notes. The Story is created by The Mission, a veteran-owned media company and podcast network. To get more stories like this one, you can subscribe to our daily newsletter at mission.org. The Mission creates custom podcasts and original content in partnership with world-class companies like Salesforce. To learn more about how you can sponsor an original podcast, head over to mission.org/studios.